There you go. Second version there. Janine Barry and Carousel. And Ellie has her tablet in hand. I'm very impressed, Ellie. Obviously, you got everything sorted through there.
I'm just getting your picture, actually, Alex, word. So I can post it.
Oh, Lord. Posting. You see, it's just communication's gone crazy here, and it's just amazing. Ian, what did you make of Janine Barry and Carousel?
Well, she's got a quite nice voice. I'm quite attracted to voices, rather raucous, but I don't know. If I just thought halfway through this, music is meant to be a mathematical progression, and, but then listening to the three times table being recited very slowly.
I see. Well, at least the times table was actually there.
I suppose so. I mean, it wasn't terrible, but it's not for me anyway. Yeah. But I would like to hear her sing something else.
Well, there you have it. Ian, as ever, a welcome input. And Ellie, what did you make of the whole sequence?
Well, what people at home won't know is that we were dancing in here,
Oh,
Alex.
It was phenomenal. It was like Strictly Come Dancing, the masterclass.
There you are. You see, my opinion matters.
Exactly.
It makes you dance. It's good.
So according to Professor Richard Wiseman, and we'll talk to him in the second part of the programme, his top five tips for making a change. Number five, break your goal into a series of steps, focusing on creating sub-goals that are concrete, measurable and time-based. When you're actually writing your wonderful books, Ian, is that something you actually like to do, or is it a case of, no, I feel like writing today, I will write today?
No, once I start writing, I make myself write every day. It's got to be a discipline.
Okay.
And I never really have suffered badly from writer's block once I've started writing. So what I do normally is I make myself write at least 500 words a day, and I try to leave it so that the last scene I'm describing isn't finished. So I can when I come to the following day,
you've got a personal cliffhanger.
Kick into it, you know, straight away, because I know exactly what's going to happen.
Number four, don't run with the crowd. Don't try and lose weight, read more, or stick with your mortgage lender just because everyone else is doing that. Look at all aspects of your life before you decide what to change. Does that resonate with you, Ian?
Yes. Well, yes. I've always tended to trust outsiders more than people who.
Never trust family. Very fatal. Bad mistake.
Never trust who?
And never trust your family. Only kidding. It's just very easy.
I trust some family. Three,
be resilient. Don't see failure as evidence that you cannot change, but rather as a signal that you need to try again.
Oh, Robert the Bruce, eh? Yeah, fair enough.
Hey?
Yeah. There's a spider in the corner.
Exactly.
Yes, do you want a spider?
It's radioactive. It's creating a whole new Spider-Man theme. Never mind. Number two, prepare. Don't just deal with an issue after it has become a problem. Avoiding a bad habit or situation before it starts is much easier. And if it's a big decision, particularly financial, do your homework.
I agree with that entirely, yes.
And Richard's top tip for making a change, believe that you can change. Thinking that your personality and habits are fixed in stone is the biggest barrier to change. Does that resonate with yourself, Ellie?
I don't know. This is all a bit sort of common sensey, isn't it, really?
That's why he's Professor of Psychology at the University of Hertfordshire.
I mean, nobody...
There's no element of wish I thought of that sort of thing, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, nobody goes out thinking, oh, I'm going to try and make a change, but I don't think I can. I mean, I like Machiavelli in The Prince, you know, and he says that changing the order of things is really hard to do because... change is hard to effect because the only people who support change are those who profit by it. And I think that if you break it down fundamentally, that's if you profit from a change, then you'll do it. If you don't, then you won't.
And also people are comforted by repetition, so they tend to be suspicious of anything new.
And that, of course, Ian, is one of the reasons why it's always a delight to feature Ellie Sample on the show, because you get The Prince by Machiavelli quoted in the near future, a series on the Borgias and Lucrezia and Ellis. Fantastic. Top 10 tips to actually cope with various other bits and pieces. Still, life continues. It's coming up to 4 minutes to 9 o'clock. The news will be with us before we know it at 9 o'clock from the Sky News Centre there. Sarah Huntley, our ace actress and Lambda tutor. And then we'll be finding out from Orla Huguenot about the Spectre of Sugar, how that's become very much the new nicotine in contemporary worlds, and also a new app you can actually use to find out how much sugar these things actually contain, things like, you know, fizzy drinks and so on and so forth.
It's terrifying, isn't it? I think I read somewhere the other day that there's 20 spoons of sugar in a can of Coke.
And five-year-olds...
Good God, I had one of those yesterday.
Five-year-olds, on average, eat their own weight in sugar each year. That can't be good.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll find out more about that. And we'll also be speaking, as I said, to the aforementioned Professor Richard Wiseman. Have you had a reasonably interesting interlinking thing with us this morning, Ian Lennox?
I have indeed, yes.
And will you be back again next week?
Yes, I will be.
I think that's splendid. Would you like the theme for Zed Cars, or would you like something completely
different? Oh, yes, I like that. Yes.
Would you? Right, well, then, in fact...
Takes me back.
I thought it might actually. I never quite worked out why this used to be used at Roker Park as the way in which, you know, the team were introduced. But as a Newcastle United supporter, I suppose you really wonder what it
was. I never knew it was. It was evident.
Yeah, no, it was. Then they switched over to Romeo and Juliet and the theme from the Montagues and the Capulets. It's strange what footballers like to actually come out to. Still, life continues.
That's when they put those shoes.
They're going all over the place now. Johnny Keating and his orchestra and the theme to Zed Cars. Do you remember that, Sarah Huntley?
Well, actually, I do indeed. Yeah. Yes, I can hear it coming through now.
Exactly.
I thought it was Benny, what's the name of the person?
Benny Hill? No, nothing to do with that. That's a different show entirely. But still, you know, we might return to that in 2017. But no, Johnny Keating and his orchestra taking us out almost to the first part of the programme. Quick introduction, it's the legend that is Sarah Huntley and the equally legendary Director of Communications of the University of Lincoln, Ellie Sample, who's in the studio.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, fantastic. That's brilliant. And we'll be heading off to the news in a matter of, let's say, 30 seconds from now. A quick weather forecast is going to be a cloudy morning with outbreaks of rain. Becoming drier and brighter and breezier in the afternoon. Highs of 6 degrees centigrade, lows of 2 degrees centigrade. So kind of standard January-ish weather. We'll find out what the situation is like in Fulham and more from Sarah Huntley in a matter of moments after, of course, the news from the Sky News.
The latest news and sport. This is Siren FM.
Personally, I've always preferred the slightly more gentler.
This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
You see, Sarah, even though you're not necessarily live every week, somehow I always feel you're part of the show.
Oh, that's nice to know.
Exactly. Very good. So, Ellie, any thoughts or questions? Because Sarah, actually, it's been quite some time since she's been last up at the University. Sarah, it's almost been a decade since you were last at the University of Lincoln, I believe, when you were doing various sort of dramatic things with us and so on.
Yes, since I last turned my fan on,
Exactly, exactly.
And really good to have you come and do some things with the students, Sarah. I mean, I know you've done some amazing stuff on TV. You did Midsummer Murders, Magic Granddad. I think you did the film Slip as well.
Her role as Rosie the anaesthetist still actually gives people chills. it's wonderful. That was in Casualty, of course.
I'd love to come up and see you all. And if I get my wish of my daughter going away to university next year, I'll have a lot more time. So
would be fantastic.
I'll come and do a few workshops up there. I'd love to.
Is Imogen not coming to Lincoln then? What's wrong? What's happened? What is it? Something we said?
Well, you don't do medicine at Lincoln, do you?
Oh, is she going to study medicine?
That's what she hopes to do.
Oh,
yep.
Fantastic! Yep. That's really good. Yep. We don't do medicine at Lincoln at the moment, but.
No, because we're too healthy, basically. You know, that's the key thing. But if I were Imogen, I remember when she was just sort of... Wait, she hadn't even been born. Still, never mind. There we are. Life continues.
There you go. Yeah. In fact, I was doing a course then.
Yes, you were, exactly. Because we had the question, why Zed Cars? Why that? And we said, well, let's have a theme. And you always used to say it's important when you're actually going to address life and actually going for an interview, etc., that you have a mental theme that sort of you hum through your whole...
So that theme for today gives me jollity in the police force. So it gives me a sort of spring in my step on the slightly tedious jobs that we all perhaps have to get through today.
Exactly.
That's what it's giving me.
Yeah.
But be happy with it.
Do you have a theme, Ellie, that you like to use to motivate folk from that point of view and say, let's go with this? Or indeed yourself?
I feel really bad because I don't... My husband, my lovely husband James, says that I live in the 1980s. But I do generally believe that the music of the 1980s was probably some of the best music ever. So I don't know if that counts.
So what would be your theme of the 1980s going on inside there now?
I think it's probably Wham. It's probably Wham.
Is this Wake Me Up Before You Go?
That's
go,
what
Wham?
I need.
That sort of scenario is actually there. Because Last Christmas, I think, has been done to death from that point of view. Young Guns Go For It, of course, is the classic scenario from that point of view. So Everything She Wants is definitely sort of in that particular theme.
So. Oh, that's good. Yes. Yeah.
Alex knows every single one. Oh, sorry. So, yes, Alex, what's your theme?
We like to know what's going on inside there.
Like, really? It's going to be a very scary place, Sarah. Honestly, you don't want to know what's happening in terms of that sort of system. It's just a sort of the, I still think you can't beat a bit of the Blue Danube to actually sort of give you a bit of grace and under pressure from that point of view. A little bit of Johann Strauss.
You're drifting, waltzing across that studio.
Well, I mean, maybe it's 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Doing a little bounce up and down.
Yeah, sometimes we actually have to have those anti-gravity shoes, otherwise we just all float up into the Brayford Pool. Who knows what would happen? Speaking of which, we didn't mention, of course, in the list of people who are coming back to the university, that Jason Bradbury is returning, Ellie, in the near future.
Yes, Jason and Chris Packham. Mm. They're not doing public lectures when they come down. They're purely lecturing. Both of them are coming in the next couple of weeks, and there's some really exciting projects going on. Chris Packham's running a project with our students on what happens when the world population hits 10 billion and what the impact of that will be, and because it's not just about food sort of per se.
Go to Mars, that's what we should do. Go to Mars.
Well, it's also about pollinators and having enough pollinators, and how many bees do you need for 10 billion people? And it gets you thinking in so many different ways, and the students are absolutely loving that. And Jason's doing a thing sort of like Ex Machina, sort of getting students to try and design a robot that will pass the Turing test, which is, again, really, really exciting.
And Sarah, as you're well aware, the Turing test is the test after Alan Turing, the code breaker. He was played by Benedict Cumberbatch. Anyway, Alan Turing actually came up with the concept of how can you actually tell whether or not the person you're speaking to at the other end of a phone, for instance, is actually a human being or not.
Yes.
Because we might not be, Zara.
I could have morphed as somebody else, you mean?
No, you might not even be human. You might have actually downloaded your consciousness into a situation
we all have to have a theme tune, because I think at this time of the day, we all have to establish that we really are who we think we are, you see?
Exactly. Existentialism and the midweek drive is something which I feel we have sadly underused in times so past.
It's the whole "when androids dream of electric sheep" thing, isn't it? Which went on
the
Voigt-Kampff
test,
exactly.
Which, of course, is that whole notion of testing how human, more human than human. That was the claim of the Tyrell Corporation.
You're horribly intellectual for this time of the morning. I have to say, it's only 9:05, and we've had clients phone us. I'm very impressed. And what's more, you understand it all.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, we're always seeking after the truth. That's what we do. We scratch that surface and hopefully sort of find a little bit more surface underneath there. And then we might find some more surface under that as well. It's wonderful. And it also paves the way for the return of William Sitwell in a few moments. Sarah, in terms of, by the way, Happy New Year. I don't think we've actually officially wished you to do that sort of thing. Did you have a good one? And was it spent in the West Country, or was it in Fulham, or indeed even Wimbledon?
Wimbledon, in fact, in Wimbledon, right. In Wimbledon, where we're probably like the rest of the country, very wet at the moment, very moist. Yes, it was spent here. It was very mild with friends, but I have to say, I don't think any of those particular friends will be listening, but it wasn't the most exhilarating. They're all going on about their aches and pains and
It's not that time. You can't listen. You've got to focus on the whole system. You should point them in the direction of the social media networks, point them in the direction of the podcast, which will be up later on today, and say, listen, you've got to have energy on these sort of things. Energy up.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you might as well just give up now.
Because do you have any resolutions, Sarah?
Do you have to make more time for myself?
That's a really good one. That's
Sorry,
a really
my
good one.
Just making a little cappuccino, as you can hear in the background. I'm just moving to another room.
That's all right. Hello, John. Quick hello to John there.
Happy New Year, John.
He won't pay any attention at all. He works for a car company. It's a different line. He's just not going
there. Yes, exactly. They're different species.
Shh, right.
No, I think we should all make time for ourselves a little bit more have a moment. Oh, what is the quote? Oh, what is life if full of care?
We have no time
to stand and stare.
Exactly.
Yes, I think that's my goal for this year. Mm.
That's really good advice. Excellent advice.
Smell the roses on the way, and don't become sort of fixated on the whole thing.
Or smell the coffee.
Is somebody at the door, or is that just an alarm you've actually going off to say?
This is my grandparents' clock.
Oh, very good.
I find that very comforting. I like the sound of a clock. I like the sound of a big tick while you're working.
Well. There you have it. I mean, this is.
I think that's further proof that I'm really standing here in my dining room in Wimbledon.
You might well be, but you might have been replaced by a robotic intelligence. We don't know. I'm sure you haven't been. That's the important thing. You're still with us.
On this theme, I can link to this theatrically. You should have a look at the play Artist Ascending a Staircase by Tom Stoppard, because it's a whodunit, but it's all set for the radio. But the theme actually is, how do we know that anything really exists? And in fact, they solved the crime by the sound effects. Wow. And further link, it turns out to be, you don't know how the chap has died, and it turns out to be not a bee, but a wasp that has killed him. But you find that out through the sound effect. It's Artist Descending a Staircase by Tom Stoppard.
Exactly. Yeah, and if he'd
linking nicely this morning, aren't I?
That's superb, Sarah. If we brought in Kafka, he could have actually metamorphosed into one of those species as well. Genius.
There's no flies on you this morning.
You are shocked today.
A quick reminder.
I put this down for going for a swim at 6:15. So I think that's probably it, isn't it?
That's rocking and rolling. At the Lincoln Drill Hall, according to the John Wenham diary, and John Wenham, of course, who dropped in earlier to wish us a Happy New Year, he's currently beavering away on the current events diary. I'd like to point out that on Sunday, the 10th of January at 3:30 p.m. at the Lincoln Drill Hall, it's the Lincoln Symphony Orchestra playing a concert which they're calling Viennese Extravaganza, an ever-popular annual event featuring waltzes, polkas, marches, and many other pieces from the Strauss family and others. Nick Fallowfield...
Oh, that's one for you. Exactly. You'll be waltzing along there.
Precisely. Exactly. Nick Fallowfield. The Emperor Waltz. Superb. Welcome back, Nick Fallowfield, to conduct the orchestra's fifth New Year concert of Strauss favourites, plus a few entertaining items from lesser-known contemporaries to lift the spirits during the dark days of the New Year. There is something about January, I suppose, that actually, even though we've technically passed the shortest day on December 21st, it's still no real notice that it is. I mean, when we look out now, we still see it's a little bit bleak out there, really.
Yeah, because that was the whole reason for the introduction of Christmas originally, wasn't it?
Well, that and Saturnalia, of course, you know.
Yes.
I think, you know, various sort of other feasts are actually there. Just pagan festivals to say, the world is not going to end. Let's dance around things.
We must dance again, Alex.
More festivals and more theme tunes inside ourselves at this time. Because, you see, psychologically, when we'll get to Christmas, we think we're halfway through winter. We're not.
No, exactly.
This is a difficult thing. So that's where January and February can become.
As Ellie suggested, we may still have snow. You know,
I'm convinced that we will. And the panto is still on. So you can still go and see the panto at the Drill Hall as well.
Exactly.
And at the Theatre Royal.
So,
but there's no snow in Europe. This is the problem. Skiing is having a bit of a problem this year.
It's probably all down to those underground tests they're doing in North Korea. But never mind. We won't talk much about the North Koreans. Although I gather this programme is very popular with the Sarah, have you had a recently interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today?
I have, yes.
And will you be back with us again on either this one or the Midweek Drive in the very near future?
I would love to be, yes.
Hey,
yes.
And would you like to introduce Ellie Semple's band Wham with Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go?
This is just for Ellie. Her internal tune. Wham, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
Yeah. And so we move on to a consideration that we certainly flagged up heavily over 2015, and regrettably it looks as though we're going to have to do the same thing over 2016, and that's using the headline that the new nicotine is indeed sugar. Sugar is the new nicotine. It's a situation which is creating all manner of difficulties and challenges, and clearly needs to be addressed to start beginning to state some ways in which we could actually start coping with this huge sugar plague that seems to be upon us. We're delighted to be able to welcome from Public Health England ace nutritionist Orla Eugeniu. Orla, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you. And you?
I'm very good. Well, I say very good. Recovering from a cold bug, etc. But quite shocked at this number. Again, looking at number crunching that we see in this particular area, that five-year-olds are eating and drinking their body weight in sugar every year. That cannot be good by anybody's reckoning.
Absolutely. That's absolutely correct. So we know that children are having three times more than the recommended maximum amount of sugar per day, and that's simply too much.
Now, if we're looking at this, clearly, you know, you have the kind of classic line that you have a bottle looks that size that has so much more sugar in the whole sort of system. Actually, there, you know, 4 to 10 year olds consuming 5,500 sugar cubes, around 22 kilograms a year. Clearly, we need to adopt some sort of change within this, and change for life is the best way forward. So, how can parents, in particular, start making use of technology to hopefully start addressing these challenges that they're faced, obviously, with their offspring?
Absolutely. It's a really good point. So one of the things that we've done here at Change for Life with our new Sugar Smart campaign is to create an app that parents can use, or anybody can use, in fact, on their mobile phone. And it basically gives you tells you the amount of total sugar that's lurking in the everyday foods and drinks that you've got in your cupboards, or the kinds of foods and drinks that you might be buying when you're in the supermarket.
Again, you might well sort of argue from this point. I mean, we led up with that line that has been stated by some other nutritionists we've actually spoken to in the past, that you have here a situation that is just as pernicious to general public health as indeed nicotine was. Is it the same sort of challenge in terms of weaning people away from sugar, or is it a case of saying, well, actually, no, it's not quite as bad as that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's a significant issue. I'm just mentioning, you know, the amount of sugar that's going into the diet of children. You mentioned there in terms of the figure, you know, over 5,500 cubes of sugar in the diet of children per year, and that's simply too much. And if we relate this to some of the health harms around having too much sugar, so having too much sugar is bad for our health for several reasons. One of them is because if we look at the rates of overweight and obesity, so by having too much sugar, we're getting in too many calories, more than we need, and this means that we're more likely to become overweight or obese, and it's being overweight or obese that increases our chances of developing things like type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and certain cancers. So again, looking at the figures for type 2 diabetes as an example, something like 90% of people who've got type 2 diabetes are overweight or obese. So it's a significant issue, and sugar is contributing to that. That's just obesity. We're also looking at things like tooth decay as an example. Almost a third of five-year-olds and almost half of eight-year-olds had tooth decay. And that's the most common reason for 5 to 9 year old kids being admitted to hospital. And that's because they're having tooth extractions because those teeth are rotten. So it's a significant public health issue, and not just a public health issue, but also a personal issue. Because we also know that kids who are overweight or obese are more likely to be bullied and therefore miss school as a consequence of that.
So let's return to this free app again that is available, presumably to be downloaded from the Change for Life website. One of the things that is often confusing, and a lot of folk tend to get a bit concerned about this, is advertisements that kind of promote stuff as being healthy when actually they're not. And without any mentioning any names, there are drinks that suggest that they're perfectly okay and they're really energy drinks, but actually they're just stacks of sugar that are actually there. Will this app hopefully identify the challenges with those areas?
It certainly will. You're absolutely right. And one of the things that you can do is download the app for free, and you could get it from Google Play or from the App Store, and you can download it there for free. And that will certainly highlight the amount of total sugar in everyday foods and drinks. So as an example, in energy drinks, cola drinks, something like a juice drink as an example, the app will tell you the amount of sugar in that. Like, I can tell you the amount of sugar in that. It's got about 22 grams of sugar in an average juice drink, and that's about 5 sugar cubes. It's quite a lot.
Which, again, you know, what most folk would tend to suggest, actually, that's supposed to be a healthy aspect, whereas actually it's not. It's anything but healthy, really.
not at all. And there was a very large report published last year by the Scientific Advisory Committee on Nutrition looking specifically at the relationship between health and sugars. And they very clearly stated that sugary drinks have no place in a child's daily diet. So it's really important that we cut back on those sugary drinks and instead replace them with things like plain waters, low-fat milks, diet, sugar-free or no added sugar drinks.
Is this a winnable campaign? Because, I mean, it does seem to be year in, year out. We sort of see these stories that obviously hit the headlines, and yet somehow along the base the message doesn't seem to be getting across that actually sugar is not good for you.
Well, that's a really interesting point. I think on the surface, lots of people are aware that sugar isn't good for them, but perhaps when they appraise their own diet, they don't realise exactly how much sugar is in there. And that's why the app will really help them to be able to understand the amount of sugar that's in their food and drink. But just coming back to your point, it's an interesting one because sugar has been with us for quite some time. We're quite fond of eating it. It tastes good for sure. And it's really easy to consume because it's all around us. And it's important to note that it's taken us the best part of 30 years to become an overweight or obese nation. It's going to take some time to cut down on the amount of sugar in our diet. And it's not just by downloading an app that you can do that, but it's also by manufacturers reformulating foods and by other issues that government can take in relation to cutting down on the amount of sugar in the nation's diet.
And in terms of, obviously, the other issues that we've heard over the years that are impactful in terms of diet, things like excess fat content, aspects relating to salt, of course, which seems to have taken a bit of a backseat recently in terms of problematic issues with respect to that. Is the ultimate message really, look, you need to have a balance in these kind of things, and that's one of the things we've missed out in the 21st century. We're kind of overloading our systems, and although our bodies are delightful machines and wonderful machines, actually organically organising the whole thing, they can't cope when you literally just overload the system.
Yeah, you're right. Certainly, sugar is something that we're highlighting at the moment, but we also have plenty of messages and advice on how to cut down on fat, particularly saturated fat, and salt. And so if you search Change for Life online, we've got lots of hints and tips about how to eat a healthy, balanced diet overall.
And the web app, as I say, is obviously available from that point of view as well. Although we could take for a long time to actually work through this, but it's been fascinating just getting a snapshot of some of the issues. And I think some of the pointers that can actually be used to address these issues with respect to coping with sugar and actually sort of effectively reducing the amount of sugar in one's diet. Has it been an okay telephonic link for your good self? Has it worked for you?
Absolutely.
So I take it we can speak again, hopefully in 2016, or the Hugnio. I must get the pronunciation right there in one way, shape or form. We salute you and speak soon. Take care now.
Thanks very much.
And so it goes. Life continues in its own merry way with something which I don't think I'll insult your intelligence with, the Archies and Sugar Sugar. William Sitwell is going to be around. He's going to be a little bit late, so we'll have to squeeze in a couple of other sort of folks in betwixt times. Ellie, that gives us a few chances to do a few more plugs for events and things that are happening as far as the University of Lincoln is concerned in January. I think you wanted to mention, obviously, the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, which is doing some sensational stuff as ever. You can go to lpac.co.uk for the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, find out all sorts of things that are actually coming up as far as that's concerned. We were fortunate enough to actually see the splendid winter show, which of course was Peter Pan earlier from that point of view, and Commuter Jazz returns very shortly Friday evenings, of course, in the Zen Cafe bar between 5 and 7 p.m. Have you ever availed yourself of Commuter Jazz?
I haven't. I'm normally working, to be honest with you, Alex. I know that sounds really sad, but I very rarely get away in time. But I have to say, Peter Pan, absolutely fantastic. Our students really did a fabulous job. I mean, it was worthy of the London stage, I think.
An outstanding production, particularly the way they actually managed to cycle round in a confined space without falling off.
I know, and the crocodile. That crocodile that ran across the stage.
It was quite frankly phenomenal, in fact.
Absolutely brilliant.
As I've already said to the team, to already up the level for that for the 2016 routine, the bar has been set considerably high.
I have to say, I thought my favourite so far had been the Narnia story that they did
2 years ago.
2 years ago when they created the massive lion that was just so fantastic. It was so impressive. But this year they really took it to a new level. But in LPAC coming up, they've got Ramesh Rangathan, very well-known comedian, and really come from to the top of the game, really, this year, hasn't he? And we're very lucky. I think he's here on the 10th of February. Now, I don't know if there are still tickets, but if there are, I think that's definitely one to see.
It's worthwhile looking through the whole process. I'm particularly interested, of course, in Chris Ramsey's All Growed Up, which is the 20th of March, on Sunday, the 20th of March, that's working through that. Of course, the Festival of the Spoken Nerd, that's ended. So clearly, a couple of things you'll need to just work through and check that the show is still actually on, because obviously the webkeeper for the Linkford Performing Arts Centre has sort of still put on some archive material there, which we need to look through. But yes, as ever, go to the Linkford Performing Arts Centre, or indeed, check out Inspired On Air on Siren 107.3 FM. Third Wednesday of every month, we'll be focusing once again on the Linkford Performing Arts Centre and a whole heap of other goodies that are coming through from that as well. So all good material.
There's a huge amount going on in Lincoln now.
Exactly.
Absolutely loads.
Yeah, you're not a Lincoln citizen, are you, originally? Or are you?
No. I'm a bit all over. I was born in Reading and then went to primary school in Scotland, in Edinburgh, and then went down to Plymouth and then lived in Liverpool and Leicester and London and anywhere beginning with L, really.
And allowing for that wealth of, obviously, exploration and experiences that you've actually been, how does Lincoln... Because I would have thought, Lincoln initially would have thought, where the heck's that? You know, Liverpool, London, all the rest of the bits and pieces. Is it something that becomes, in a sense, part of you? I mean, because you've been with us, thankfully, for nigh on a decade now in many ways. So
it's 5 years.
It's five years.
Half a decade. No, I absolutely love Lincoln. It's definitely the city where I felt most at home. I moved here from Oxford, where I'd spent 5 years previously. And it's very similar to Oxford in that we have the beautiful Belgate area and we have the beautiful cathedral. But
have a university as well?
Yes, we have a far better university here in Lincoln. And I genuinely think, from a student experience perspective, in my opinion, the University of Lincoln is just one of the best in the country. And we're rated by the Sunday Times University Guide as being one of the top modern universities. And, you know, in a number of subjects, psychology, we're number one in the UK for student experience. I think there is nowhere in the UK that gives you an experience like the University of Lincoln. And you can really see it in our employment statistics. You know, courses like engineering, 100% employment within 6 months.
And I'm sure that if Mary Stewart is listening to this, or indeed on the podcast, the salary raise will be a matter of days ahead. But you have to be working through that.
It is genuine, though. I mean, you asked where I like living. I mean, I was quite worried when I first came to Lincoln, because I used to live between Oxford and London, so it was sort of like a half-hour drive into London.
A bit more than that these days, really.
It's very different now.
2.5 hours or thereabouts. Still, maybe the trains will improve.
But I would rather be here than anywhere else in the whole world.
So tragically, it looks as though William Sitwell will be unable to join us. Never mind. It's partly due to the fact that we need to squeeze in, obviously, Professor Richard Wiseman in a few moments with the psychology of change. Although we could try him live. We'll try William live just for one last moment and see whether or not he will actually respond and actually sort of pick up his phone via a live connection. A bit of a risk, but you never know. If you don't take the chance, who knows? He might answer. He may not. We may simply get a voicemail. It's all part of that excitement, really, as we approach 24 minutes to 10 o'clock here on Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. William, good morning. Happy New Year. It's a brief one in all sorts of ways. Can I introduce you very quickly to the Director of Communications at the University of Lincoln? That's Ellie Sample.
Hello, William.
And he's gone. There we are. You see, it was a quick hello. It's a quick gone. He's headed off. And he probably is remote and rural, but at least he said hello. So
yes,
that's
he said hello. There's obviously some kind of gastronomic problem somewhere.
Well, it may simply be he's out of range. You know, it may simply be that he's out of range and uncontactable from that point of view. It may simply be as basic as that. We had some Wham earlier. Are there any other 80s tunes that you'd like to have as a motivating theme, Ellie, to take us round to this psychology of change, mind over matter feature that we're going to be featuring, hopefully, with Professor Richard Wiseman in a few moments?
Well, I'm tempted to suggest Howard Jones. What is
really?
That? Because I know Howard Jones is coming to the Drill Hall on the 20th of February.
With the man in chains, of course, who used to dance along with him.
Jed, was he called Jed?
He was called something. Jed seems as good a name as any from that
sort of
point of view.
I think he was called Jed, and he'd have half his face painted and half his face not, and do a little dance.
He did, yes. It was quite surreal in its own. Howard Jones, of course, was also classically trained, I believe. He was a classically trained pianist, amongst
other
things. That's
right, from High Wycombe.
I'd like to get to know you well, hide and seek, but no, you asked for this one. And what is love? Is it a rhetorical question? Is it a metaphysical question? Is it just a question you want to ponder at 9:37 on a morning? Well, whatever. Well, whether it's rhetorical or not, clearly one of the key things we've been addressing on the programme this morning have been relating to mind over matter, the psychology of change, and we're delighted to be able to welcome from the University of Hertfordshire, Professor Richard Wiseman. Richard, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you.
Delighted to touch base with yourself. I was actually at the University of Hertfordshire a matter of months ago delivering a paper on utopias and dystopias, which is quite an interesting line of things. And what better place than Hertfordshire to deliver that particular paper? It's wonderful still. I was referring to Dune and re-evaluating Dune. But let's move on to this whole notion of the psychology of change. Ellie Sample, Director of Communications at the University of Lincoln, is with us in the studio.
Hello.
And we were looking at the top five tips you've had here. Is it a case of not so much fear of missing out, but this fear of change that we actually have, that somehow, you know, this research that suggested that a third of Britons associate change with uncertainty, we worry too much, don't we?
Absolutely. This is research by TSB, which is out this morning, showing that, as you say, around about a third of people, when they hear the word change, they associate it with uncertainty, with a loss of control, and we'd like to be in control of whatever situation we're in. And I think the message this morning is it doesn't need to be like that. There are things you can do to make change a lot less challenging.
Now, as one of the youngest ever members of the Magic Circle and then moving into psychology, of course, people might say, well, it's easy for Richard. He knows what he's doing. He's got it all sorted. But you do say that there's a part of us which can actually help with this in terms of confidence and controlling the change.
Yep, so I think a key thing is not to rely just on willpower. That runs out pretty quickly. But to use some of the psychological tricks, and of course one of the key ones you hear lots of people talking about, is breaking down any big goal into manageable chunks. And so if you say, oh, I'm going to go to the gym more often, in fact, I'm going to go 5 nights a week, well, you're probably going to fail fairly early on because that's such a major change. If in week one you just go once, then you achieve the goal, you feel good about yourself, and then you can increase the goal as time goes on. So not to sort of bite off too much.
May the 24th, apparently, is the day when most people would actually give up our resolutions, which is an interesting line in terms of this whole sequence. Ellie, of course, you've made a few changes as well in terms of your own lifestyle. Does this resonate with what your own experience, what Richard's saying?
Well, I've recently given up smoking about a month and a half ago, and I have to admit, I tried the whole doing it slowly, cutting down to sort of five a day and then cutting down to one a day over the last 10 years. And every now and again, I'd just fall off the wagon and, well, every other day I'd fall off the wagon and go back
Richard,
to sort of 10 a day.
Richard, how can we help Ellie keep on that wagon and go off into the glorious future of a nicotine-free environment?
Well, giving up smoking is one of the hardest goals, actually, and it's got the largest failure rate associated with it for all sorts of reasons. I think a key part of it, though, is that when people do fall off the wagon, as everyone does with every type of change, that when you fail, not to see it as evidence of, well, that's it, I can't change, I'm going to go back to old ways. Rather as a temporary setback, maybe there's something, a lesson to be learned, but actually to then carry on even when the going gets tough. Because if you do see it as, well, that's it, that's evidence I can't change, I'm that sort of person, I'm a creature of habit, that's really the worst mindset to have.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I have to admit what really worked for me in the end was an electronic cigarette, which meant that I could have the equivalent of a real cigarette. So, you know, the whole thing that I wasn't actually losing out, I was benefiting. And I also sat down and worked out, you know, apparently you lose 5 minutes of your life for every cigarette that you smoked. So I worked out that I'd already lost 1.5 years.
In fact, you're indeed not alive at this particular time. It's sort of minus territory. The most pernicious words, Richard, I've often found, certainly when dealing with students in this whole thing, is the notion of I can't. You know, those dreadful words, I can't do that, I can't do it, etc. And actually fixing your personality and habits in stone. And I noticed your number one tip in terms of making the change was this whole notion of belief. It is all about the belief, isn't it?
Absolutely, and that came out across the research. And so we had around about 50% of the population saying, you know what, I'm the sort of person that cannot change. I'm a creature of habit. I'm fixed in stone. And that's why there's no point in even trying. And that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So shifting to the mindset of actually, you know, I can change, and the easiest way of doing that is to think, well, you know, were you the same person 5-10 years ago? You probably weren't. In between then and now, you have changed, and you will continue to change. That's one of the joys about living. So shifting that mindset is a lot more productive.
Is it that the world's changing as well, though, in that we're constantly being told that we should change? We're constantly being told that we're not good enough as we are, you know, whether it be on social media, and we heard about the research today with regard to Childline and young people facing more problems than ever before with social media and online bullying. But, you know, we're constantly being told that we shouldn't smoke, we shouldn't drink, we shouldn't eat, we shouldn't... There seems to be, I don't know whether it's a sort of nanny state, but definitely a set of ideas that are constantly put out by the media and so forth, saying you are not good enough as you are.
I think there's some truth to that. I mean, also with social media, it's very easy to compare yourself to others who have been successful, and therefore you don't feel quite so good about yourself. I think that's easier to do now than ever before. And we're getting used to this idea of instant gratification. You want to see that video right now, or you want to communicate with your friend right at this moment in time. And I think change is often about the long game. There isn't that sense of instant gratification, you know, overnight success. It's a lot slower than that because it's a lot more meaningful. And I think people need to shift into that mindset as well. And, of course, it isn't really quite in line with some of the notions of instant communication, instant gratification.
It makes perfect sense. And as I say, to return to where we came in, I know that there's talk about working together in partnership with the University of Lincoln and the University of Hertfordshire. Our very own Professor Matthew Crago actually was an ex-University of Hertfordshire soul. So just magic sort of works through that. For the moment, Professor Richard Wiseman, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
Fascinating.
What else can you actually do? If it's a TSB survey, banking industry, get in a magician to actually magic the problems away. That's what it's all about. I'm obviously a trained psychologist as well, so can I take it you will hopefully return in the not-too-distant future and connect with us again and keep us updated about how we can actually address change as something we should embrace rather than actually fear?
Absolutely. Delighted to come back.
Superb. Absolutely wonderful. And over to Clammy Fisher.
Drive on Siren FM, guaranteed to keep you safe from giant lizards.
Just in case you were worried.
Okay, so it's a big thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Sarah Huntley, Orla Huguenot, and Professor Richard Wiseman. And a quick hello once again to William Sitwell. But kept till the very end of the show, Ellie Sample, we've got the delightful soul who would have been certainly very pleased with the treats you brought in today. In fact, so pleased that I'm keeping them back for her for next Wednesday when she'll be returning. It's Claire Margerison, finally your English student. Good morning, Claire. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, thank you. Yes. Currently caffeinating myself.
Well, I've got some wonderful, a selection of wonderful cakes that Ellie brought in for the midweek drivettes. Of course, you're in Harrogate. What can we say?
Claire.
I'm way too far away.
Well, that's it. Have you managed to catch any of the programme, Claire? Has it been a case of, don't be silly, I'm a student, you know, I've been getting up before sort of 9:45.
Well, I was asleep,
yes.
And then the Age UK guy turned up to pick up some boxes, I had to wake up get myself sorted life.
You've
missed the best radio show ever in the history of the world.
Oh, Ellie, there's always like a little bit of hyperbole there.
I will have to listen.
The podcast will be available. Ellie, your question that you had for Claire, top tips for the weekend. And
yes.
If anybody should be able to actually provide this, it's a lass who has a German grandmother who wishes to work in publishing, who's doing fine stuff in the University of Lincoln in her final year now. But she should have one or two tips for what to do with the weekend. So, Claire, no pressure, but you've got a couple of minutes. What are your top tips for the weekend? Mine was quite simple. Keep breathing.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one, Alex. But I would also say read lots of books. Read all those books that you have wanted to read. Just chill out, give yourself a break, have a bath, you know, but mainly read.
I think that's very good. I was hoping you were going to direct us to a nightclub. So we, us oldies, could go out and have some fun somewhere.
She's a very well-meaning sort of first-class honours-seeking student, is Claire Margerison. She kind of got time for things like nightclubs and various other bits and pieces. Good heavens.
Pub. I'm more of a pub person. A good pub, a good chat with my friends, that's where I'm at.
What's your favourite Lincoln pub then, Claire?
Oh, that's a really tough one. I really, really like Straight and Narrow and Widow Cullen's Well. They're probably my favourites.
Very good choice. Very good choice. I think that's a top tip for you and me, Alex. Something to do at the weekend.
Absolutely. It just seems as though the whole thing has been magically put together. And as I say, you've stepped into the breach that William Sitwell left with capable abilities, Claire. Even though I say we did have a quick hello from William, but that was it, really.
We did. He was going to speak to us about Gastronomica, and I was really hoping to ask Claire for a top tip as well onto a really good chippy in Lincoln.
Oh, I haven't actually been to a chippy in Lincoln yet.
You are so healthy. That's really good.
I haven't made the trek up the hill to get some fish and chips yet. I must do that because it's my last term now.
So 2.5 years you've been an undergraduate at the University of Lincoln and you have not availed yourself of some of the Lincoln fish and chip scenarios. So, mate, well, outstanding.
It's ridiculously awful.
Well, never mind, because on Wednesday's show, Jamie Anderson's back with us. Yay! Talking about what he's doing with, of course, this year's 50th anniversary of Captain Scarlet, amongst other things that'll be there. We'll have the return of Phil Dearness. We've also got Cameron Tilbury back with us. You're going to be back with us. We've also got, from the School of English and Journalism, the one only Katie Dorr will be back.
Ooh, fantastic.
Yes, exactly. Katie Dorr will be back with us again. It'll be sensational. And, of course, you're returning back to the Midweek Drive on Wednesday. Ellie, have you enjoyed your time on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
Absolutely bodacious, thank you.
Oh, and can we look forward to featuring again in the very near future?
I'd be delighted to be invited.
And I shall put these cakes under top quality security guard. I think they should be okay. I mean, I'm just having a quick look at the thing down. Yes, they're all right. They are actually technically festive cupcakes, but let's say we're looking at celebrating the festive cupcakes of the Russian Orthodox Christmas, which of course just started yesterday. So on that basis, we're okay. You know, it's got to be Christmas somewhere in the galaxy. That's the important thing. Claire, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I have indeed, yes.
Helps when we have a telephone number we can reach you on. That's the important thing. I take it we'll be speaking again and we'll see you next week.
Yes, sure thing. Have a good week.
Heaps of other good stuff coming up.
Goodbye, Claire. You take care.
And farewell to your good self, Ellie Sample.
Goodbye, Alex. Thank you.
And the place to go, of course, universityoflincoln.ac.uk or lincoln.ac.uk for any of the other bits and pieces we've spoken about in terms of upcoming speakers, guest events and so on. Isn't that the case?
That's spot on. Silver.